Do.
This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton. U.S. President Joe Biden is feeling emboldened after Democrats defied predictions of a big Republican gain during the midterm elections on Tuesday. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
At a news conference, the president noted the press and pundits forecast a giant red wave.
It didn't happen.
Instead,
Democrats had a strong night,
limiting Republican gains in the House and keeping up a potential path toward holding the Senate majority. At the same time,
the voters were also clear that they are still frustrated. I get it.
But the president says while he's willing to compromise with Republicans amid the likelihood of divided government,
I'm not going to change anything in any fundamental way.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
There will be a runoff. We can look at the outstanding vote totals, and neither one would be over 50%.
That's Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger announcing the next steps in the U.S. state of Georgia's efforts to elect its next senator. Neither Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock nor Republican challenger Herschel Walker got enough votes for a general election majority, which is required under state law. The two candidates will now meet again in a vote on December 6th. AP's Meg Kennard says the outcome of that race could have much larger implications.
With 4 weeks to go until we have a winner in the Georgia Senate contest, we may not know until then which party will be in control of the United States Senate.
That's AP's Meg Kennard on the Georgia state runoff scheduled for December 6th. In Europe, a nationwide strike over cost of living increases caused by inflation and massive energy bill hikes linked to the war in Ukraine slowed public transportation on Wednesday. Pardon me. This is VOA News. Russia's defense minister said Wednesday that Moscow's troops were retreating from the key southern Ukraine city of Kherson, although the Ukrainian officials expressed skepticism that a full withdrawal was underway. VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine spoke to reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv on Wednesday about why this retreat is significant.
It's an extremely important city for both sides because Kherson was the only administrative center that Russian forces managed to capture since the beginning of full-scale invasion.
Defense Chief Sergei Shoigu made the announcement in a televised meeting with Russia's top military leader. The commander for Russia's forces in Ukraine told Shoigu the withdrawal decision was difficult, but it would preserve the lives of servicemen. Ukraine was initially skeptical of the Russian retreat, suggesting it might be a Russian ruse for ambush of Ukrainian troops. The head of the UN's nuclear watchdog on Wednesday said Iran did not offer anything new during a recent meeting in Vienna about its nuclear program, but added that talks would continue in the coming weeks. Tehran had announced it was sending a delegation to Vienna to try to narrow differences with the International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, which is trying to keep tabs on Iran's nuclear activity. Iran is seeking closure of the IAEA's investigation of its nuclear activities, among other guarantees, in order to revive the country's 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. In the first head-to-head comparison, mindfulness meditation worked just as well as a standard drug for treating anxiety. AP correspondent Shelley Adler has the story.
A study with about 200 adults over 6 months tested a widely used mindfulness program that included 2.5 hours of classes weekly and 45 minutes of daily practice at home. Participants were randomly assigned to the program or daily use of a generic drug sold under the brand name Lexapro for depression and anxiety. After 2 months, anxiety as measured on a severity scale declined by about 30% in both groups and continued to decrease during the following 4 months. The study was published in the journal JAMA Psychiatry. I'm Shelley Adler.
An increase of COVID-19 cases in Chinese cities has prompted Beijing to require most residents to undergo testing every 24 hours instead of the usual 72 hours. China reported more than 8,000 new infections on Tuesday. And about 36 climate activists protested Wednesday during the United Nations Conference for Climate Change, or COP27, calling for accelerating the transition to renewable energy. Climate change protests also occurred in Britain and in Italy. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today's Thursday, November 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, President Joe Biden pledges to work with Republicans in Congress, whatever the outcome of the midterm election.
Our democracy has been tested in recent years, but with their votes, the American people have spoken, proving once again that democracy is who we are.
Russia orders the withdrawal of troops from occupied Kherson as Ukrainian forces close in.
Brigadier General Pat Ryder, the Pentagon press secretary, just told VOA that it's too early to tell whether Russian forces are actually withdrawing from Kherson as they say that they are.
And North Korea fires a short-range ballistic missile towards its eastern sea, extending a recent barrage of weapons. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. With the fade-up Democrats' control of both the House and Senate still hanging in the balance, President Joe Biden told reporters Wednesday at the White House news conference that he hopes to work with Republicans in Congress, whatever the outcome. This story from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
The midterm elections Tuesday marked a good day for democracy, President Joe Biden told reporters during a wide-ranging 53-minute encounter at the White House.
Our democracy has been tested in recent years, but with their votes, the American people have spoken and proven once again that democracy is who we are.
The president said the Democrats did better than expected, and he will invite leaders of both parties to the White House after he returns from the G20 summit in Indonesia to discuss how to work together to advance economic and national security priorities. Asked about his plans to pursue a second term, Biden said he intends to run and will consult with his family over the holidays, adding he is a great respecter of fate. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Steve. Republicans closed in on a narrow House majority on Wednesday after the much-expected, quote, red wave, unquote, did not materialize, with Democrats defying dismal predictions. Control of the Senate hinges on tight Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia races. The Georgia Senate race between Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock and Republican Herschel Walker headed to a December 6th runoff. The race for control of Congress will determine the future of President Joe Biden's agenda and serve as a referendum on his administration as the nation reels from record-high inflation and concerns over the direction of the country. Joining us live on the phone is VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell. Hello, Anita.
Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us. Despite the president's optimistic view of the results of the election so far, it's shaping up to be a more difficult 2 years for him, regardless. What do you think?
Right. The president has acknowledged that, and as we just heard, he said he would invite leaders from both parties to come to the White House in coming weeks to discuss their priorities. He also added that he was willing to compromise with Republicans, except he appeared to draw a red line with Social Security and said he would not negotiate on lowering Social Security benefits.
The Republicans hoped for a red wave overwhelming majority, and that did not happen. Do you think this will affect the way they run business? Because a lot of expectations, but not a lot of it proved out.
Right. Well, I think that remains to be seen. And if you mean, are the Republicans going to change because they didn't get the victory that they expected, or are they going to continue to stand firmly against pretty much all Democratic policies, it remains to be seen. But President Biden, for his part, has said he's willing to cross the aisle, so to speak, and to deal with leaders of both parties and work with them on shared priorities. So he's stressing unity as he has basically from the beginning of his term.
And I need the last question. What are you hearing? What was the reason for the unexpected strong performance of the Democrats? Going into this election, a lot of people were looking for a wipeout.
Right. I mean, the historical trends were certainly against the party in power. That's what happens in U.S. midterm elections. The party in power usually takes a bit of a hit because they get blamed for everything that's going wrong in the country. But the explanation, according to the White House at least, is that the center held, that the right-wing extremism of what the president described today as the super mega MAGA Republicans, didn't persuade the Republican base or, you know, all Americans to go to that. And he is now saying that they are you know, lunatic fringe and don't represent the Republicans. So he's trying to leave this opening, and it sounds like he's just trying to find common ground, and that's why he thinks Americans were trying to do the same, which is why I think he thinks that this election went the way it did.
Thank you very much, Anita, for joining us.
Thank you.
That's VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell. And for more on the U.S. midterm elections, check out voaafrica.com and voanews.com and stay tuned to your favorite VOA news programs. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu on Wednesday ordered his troops to withdraw from the occupied Ukrainian city of Kherson and take up defensive lines on the opposite bank of the river Dnipro. The announcement marked one of Russia's most significant retreats and a potential turning point in what Moscow calls its, quote, special military operation, unquote, now nearing the end of its ninth month. The news followed weeks of Ukrainian advances towards the city and a race by Russia to relocate more than 100,000 of its residents by ferrying them to the other side of the river. President Volodymyr Zelensky warned that the Russians were feigning a pullout from Kherson to lure the Ukrainian army into an entrenched battle in the strategic industrial city. In Washington, U.S. defense chiefs are keeping a wary eye on the sudden retreat by the Russian forces. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Bob.
I'm actually hearing from Pentagon sources that they are looking at this with caution. Brigadier General Pat Ryder, the Pentagon press secretary, just told VOA that it's too early to tell whether Russian forces are actually withdrawing from Kherson as they say that they are. But the Pentagon is going to continue to monitor the situation, he says. And he says that the U.S. military's focus will remain on working closely with international allies and partners to provide Ukraine with the security assistance that we have been seeing for months and months.
The Russians are framing this as a repositioning of his forces, but others are saying it's because of the pressure and the counterattack of the Ukrainians, just too much for the Russian forces to stand. What's the position of the Pentagon?
Well, absolutely. The Ukrainians have been pressuring the Russians, potentially more than the Russians expected. Ukrainians have been able to take the firepower given to them by the United States, given to them by NATO allies, and use that against the Russians very effectively. We have seen a war in which, remember, just a few months ago, people were wondering how quickly Russia could overtake them because no one expected Ukraine to be able to fight back in the way that it has. So what's happening in Kherson, if indeed Russia is pulling out, and this isn't some sort of ploy, because we have seen Russia do everything on the spectrum from denying war crimes to trying to divert attention elsewhere. So again, the Pentagon is saying we have to watch this carefully. We cannot take Russia at its word when it says that it's withdrawing. But if indeed this is a withdrawal, then the Ukrainians are going to take this as a victory.
That's VOA correspondent, Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington, D.C. UN human rights officials are condemning a series of deadly attacks by pro-Syrian government forces Sunday against camps housing thousands of IDPs in northwestern Syria's Idlib province. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office reports ground-based strikes and airstrikes hit nine camps housing thousands of internally displaced people. The agency has verified the killing of at least seven civilians and wounding of some 27 others. However, the opposition Syrian Civil Defense Force comes up with higher figures. It reports nine civilians were killed by cluster bombs, which are banned under international law, and more than 75 other displaced people wounded. After a long period of relative calm, fighting broke out in northern Syria 2 weeks ago between the militant Islamist group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham and some Turkish-affiliated armed groups. Human rights spokesman Jeremy Lawrence says his office warned then that fighting was likely to escalate and spread to other areas.
Sadly, it's eventuated. And we had confirmation through the Syrian national state media that pro-government forces, including Russian forces, were involved in the ground-based strikes on Sunday.
About 3 million people, half of them displaced, live in Idlib, the last remaining rebel stronghold in Syria. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports at least 400 families have been newly displaced because of this upsurge in violence. Lauren says the fact that several IDP camps in densely populated areas were struck during attacks raises serious concerns. He says it is likely many more people will become displaced as they flee in search of safety.
We emphasize to all parties in the conflict that indiscriminate attacks are prohibited by international humanitarian law and, depending on the circumstances, may further amount to war crimes.
Since Syria's civil war broke out in 2011, the United Nations estimates more than 300,000 civilians have been killed. It reports more than 13 million people have been displaced either inside Syria or as refugees in neighboring countries, making Syria the scene of the world's largest displacement crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Afghan women were stopped from entering amusement parks in Kabul on Wednesday after the Taliban's morality ministry said there would be restrictions on women being able to access public parks. This report produced by Olivia Zolino of Reuters.
Women in Afghanistan are being stopped from entering amusement parks, the latest sweeping restriction from the country's Taliban rule. Afghanistan's morality ministry confirmed women would be restricted from accessing public parks, but didn't respond to requests for further details from Reuters. It's not clear how widely the restrictions would apply, or how they'd affect a previous rule from the ministry saying parks must be segregated by gender. Since taking over last year, the Taliban has said women should not leave without a male relative and must cover their faces. Its treatment of women is one of the main reasons why Western governments refuse to recognize Afghanistan's new rulers.
That's Olivia Zolino of Reuters. In other news, North Korea fired a short-range ballistic missile towards its eastern sea on Wednesday, extending a recent barrage of weapons demonstrations, including what it described as a simulated attack on South Korean and U.S. targets last week. Seoul's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the missile was launched from the western town of Sukhon, north of the capital Pyongyang, and flew across the country towards waters of the northeastern coast. It didn't immediately release more specific flight details. The launch comes after North Korea fired dozens of missiles last week in an angry reaction to a massive combined aerial exercise between the U.S. and South Korea that the North described as an invasion rehearsal. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Fo in Washington. Australia is investigating reports that former Defence Force personnel have been approached to provide military training to China. Defence Minister Richard Marles said Wednesday that retired former soldiers had a, quote, enduring obligation, unquote, to protect state secrets and to, quote, reveal any of those secrets is a crime. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Defence Minister Richard Marles said there would be a detailed examination into claims that China had approached Australian military veterans for training. The probe will also include other security agencies. Marles wouldn't confirm if any Australians had provided training to Beijing, but he did say that a number of cases were currently being investigated. He told reporters in Canberra Wednesday that the government would change the law if there were any weaknesses in rules that apply to former defence personnel. Australian officials have said they had concerns before allegations of Chinese recruitment of former soldiers became the subject of media reporting last month. Marles said veterans have a responsibility to protect sensitive military or other information from foreign powers.
For those who do come into possession of our nation's secrets, there is an enduring obligation to maintain those secrets for as long as they are secrets, and to breach that obligation is a very serious crime.
Australia's centre-right opposition leader Peter Dutton said previously that the reports of China's attempts to recruit former soldiers were alarming, and he challenged the Labour government in Canberra to bring in new laws to prevent the activity. The formal review into alleged Chinese recruitment is due to report back to the Defence Minister by December 14. Last month, Britain's Ministry of Defence said it was taking immediate steps to deter and penalise dozens of former Royal Air Force pilots who are being paid as instructors in China. In a statement issued in October, British defence officials warned that the practice erodes the UK's defence advantage. New Zealand's defence minister has also requested advice on whether new laws were needed to stop former military pilots training pilots of foreign militaries, according to a spokeswoman from the Prime Minister's office. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Blockchain is best known as the computerized record-keeping method behind the glitzy world of cryptocurrency. Some experts predict blockchain will play an even larger role in tracking ordinary things such as food, cattle and water rights. From Denver, Colorado, Shelley Slender reports.
Cattle branding provides a legal proof of ownership. This Colorado technology expert envisions a new way to verify cattle using a technology better known for tracking cryptocurrency. Thad Bott's job is to seek out technology that can help his community. He sees promise in blockchain to better track what needs tracking, such as a cow and its products and land use. For water rights, blockchain can be an open ledger, making it easy to track what is happening and who is getting paid.
That's an important component to how to allocate those water resources equitably and according to law.
Another example, while a restaurant might boast that a burger comes from Colorado, blockchain-based apps could tell consumers more.
We can incorporate information down to which farm it came from. That could all be verified via a QR code on a menu.
Food safety might also benefit. Colorado State Representative Donald Valdez says blockchain can track food from farm to fork.
If there is a recall, the report will be analyzed within seconds.
For farmer Andre Husney, blockchain might be just more red tape.
The traceability is, yeah, she was born over there, and we butchered her over here, and she's in that freezer.
But he hopes blockchain might help gain recognition for the Zambian and Congolese farmers he's in partnership with, farmers whose essential oils and honey are blended into shampoos and soaps.
If you could scan a bottle of shampoo and say the fragrances in this shampoo were produced in the northwestern province of Zambia, that creates a personal connection.
While blockchain has potential, there's work ahead before many of these ideas could come to fruition. Shelley Schlender for VOA News, Denver, Colorado.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA is getting ready to say goodnight to its Mars InSight lander mission. The lander's power continues to drop since its energy-generating solar panels are continuing to be covered with Martian dust. The space agency says that while the mission team is doing what it can to keep the lander operating as long as possible and is taking steps to wrap up the mission, the end is expected to come within the next few weeks. NASA says in a press release that storing its vast collection of valuable data is the most important part of closing the InSight mission. According to the space agency, InSight has provided details about the interior of Mars, its liquid core, the varying subsurface remains of its largely non-existent magnetic field, weather near the lander, and the measurement of numerous quake activity. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death in police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. Next up, the results and implications of the U.S. midterm elections. Political gurus John Fortier and Jim Kessler discuss the winners and losers of congressional, state, and local elections and what it all means for the future of democracy and the rule of law in America, as well as for the remainder of President Biden's first term in office, dissecting the U.S. midterm elections. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out VOA Africa for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chino Dofo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has demonstrated its commitment to countering systemic corruption and the Russian government's malign influence campaigns in Moldova by imposing sanctions on 9 individuals and 12 entities. The sanctioned individuals and entities include oligarchs widely recognized for capturing and corrupting Moldova's political and economic institutions, and those acting as Russian instruments seeking to manipulate the United States and its allies and partners, including Moldova and Ukraine. These sanctions expose not only Russia's covert strategy in Moldova, but also demonstrate how corruption undermines the rule of law, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Brian Nelson. The Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, designated Vladimir Plahotniuk, a former government official involved in corruption. Plahotniuk's bribery of law enforcement officials reflected his long-standing efforts to capture and corrupt Moldova's judicial and law enforcement institutions, while using his wealth and political influence to undermine political rivals and rule of law in the country. The State Department imposed visa restrictions on Plahotniuk in January 2020 for his involvement in significant corruption. As part of that action, Plahotniuk and his immediate family members are generally ineligible for entry to the United States. OFAC also designated Ilan Shor, leader of the Shor Party, for being responsible for directly or indirectly engaging in interference in a foreign government election for the benefit of the Russian government. A beneficiary of a large-scale 2014 money laundering scheme related to the theft of $1 billion from Moldovan banks, Shor has worked with other corrupt oligarchs and Moscow-based entities to create political unrest in Moldova and sought to undermine Moldova's bid for EU membership. OFAC designated 7 additional individuals and 12 entities that have been involved in the Kremlin's attempts to interfere in Moldova's elections. Russia has sought to advance its own interests by providing illicit financing, including funds earmarked for bribes and electoral fraud, to support pro-Kremlin political activity in Moldova. According to Undersecretary Nelson, Russian influence operations attempt to exploit weaknesses in target countries in order to destabilize them from within. These designations reaffirm the U.S. commitment to tackling corruption as a first-order national security threat and to promoting accountability for malign actors who seek to undermine Moldova's democratic institutions and elections. The United States will continue to impose costs on those threatening democracy abroad.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.